knowledge fight.
Dan and Jordan, I am sweating.
KnowledgeFight.com.
It's time to pray.
I have great respect for Knowledge Fight.
Knowledge Fight. I'm sick of them posing as if they're the good guys, saying we are the bad guys. Knowledge Fight.
Dan and Jordan.
Knowledge Fight.
I need money. Andy in Kansas. Andy in Kansas. Stop it. Andy in Kansas. Andy. It's time to pray. Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
Knowledge Fight.
KnowledgeFight.com. I love you.
Everybody, welcome back to Knowledge Fight. I'm Dan.
I'm Jordan.
We're a couple dudes like to sit around, worship at the altar of Selene, and talk a little bit about Alex Jones.
Oh, indeed we are, Dan.
Jordan.
Dan.
Jordan.
I have a quick question for you, sir.
Whoa, too quick.
Yeah.
But what is it?
What's your bright spot?
My bright spot today, Jordan, is chaos. It has been a chaotic weekend. And here, let me just talk you through a little bit.
Okay.
So I decided that one of the things that I was going to make a priority of was getting these fucking buttons out.
Sure.
I've decided, and this is going to happen.
Yeah.
It'll all be done by Friday.
Oh my God.
I had made a goal of getting them all out by the beginning of the year. New Year's Eve or thereabouts was the plan. And then I got kind of sick at the end of the year.
Yes.
And so it kind of hampered my ability to get stuff out.
Yeah.
So I buckled down. And I've got all of the addresses on the envelopes, all of the stamps on the envelopes, and we're ready to go.
Wow.
Just packing envelopes and getting them out. And I had another wonderful encounter with the mail person, the mail carrier, who I just had bags of that I was going to go put in a post box. And he's like, I'll take those.
Oh, I got him, sir. Whether rain nor sleet nor hail nor shine.
Dude is the best.
Yeah.
But I said there was some chaos.
Mm-hmm.
And here's what happened.
Yeah.
So I needed some more stamps because I needed to finish up putting stamps on these envelopes.
Naturally.
And so I didn't want to order them because there's a bit of a delay. And so I was like, I'll just go down to the post office. I could run an errand.
Okay.
And so I go, and there's a big line. And so I decide, hey, there's a machine over there that says you can buy stamps at the machine.
That is a machine that is real?
Yeah.
I've been there. I've bought stamps.
Yeah. And so I needed to get a bunch of stamps.
Yeah.
And I needed a lot of international ones because you Scottish assholes are coming through in numbers.
Listen, we're coming. We're coming to Scotland, I swear.
I think we have to at this
We
point.
Have to.
But
just to catch up on our button money.
So I went to the machine and I got a couple hundred stamps because I thought they would print books. They do not.
Nope. That's not how they work.
They go one by one.
Was that your first? Oh, no. How many did you try and print?
300. So I am fine. I'm fine until someone gets behind me in line.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, you need to be turning around, like throwing things around, being like, nobody get near the crazy man.
It is the only machine of its sort.
Of course.
And it does not just print stamps. Apparently, you can also like scan packages.
Everything. It's a one-stop shop.
And so a guy gets behind me and I explain, I didn't know they printed one by one.
Right.
I'm sorry.
Right.
And he's very nice about it for about 5 minutes.
Right.
And he's like,
5 minutes?
He's like, how many are you printing? I'm like, there's a bunch to go. I'm so sorry. I didn't. It was humiliating. He gets less nice.
Yeah. No. Reasonable. Reasonable on his part.
Actually, this isn't fair. He was nice the whole time.
Okay.
But he was getting fucking annoyed. And I could tell because he had a box of things he just needed to scan in order to send.
If only he'd been there. You would have, if he had asked you like 2 seconds before you pressed the button, you'd have been like, please go ahead, sir.
Sure. And I
want you to be done.
And I didn't know he just needed to scan stuff. I thought he was maybe buying stamps. I'm like, can I offer you some stamps?
You did not.
I did.
Oh, you're beautiful.
So he eventually, a customer service person pops out and he's like, you know, can you scan these for me back there? And she's like, yeah, I'll take care of that. So he goes, I'm like, phew, fine. There's no one behind me in line again.
Safe.
Everything is all right.
We're at where are we at? Like progress report? We're at 120 stamps.
I have no idea.
Okay.
Because they print one by one.
Right.
I just have a
stack
of them.
You just keep going.
I don't know what's going on.
Right,
I don't know where I am.
Right.
The
only
thing I can do is guess that it takes about 10 seconds per stamp.
Oof, that's a long time.
Right. So I did the math.
Right.
I'm like, what are we at? Like 20-ish minutes? 25 minutes?
Something like that.
In there. there. So I'm fine. He's gone. Everything is all right. Until someone else shows up.
Oh, no.
And they are also quite nice.
Sure.
In terms of, like, I explained the situation. I'm like, I'm sorry. And they're
huge
like,
mishap.
Like, hey, people make, you know, we all make mistakes.
Sure, sure, sure.
And then they start to get more annoyed.
That is how it works. That is how it works.
But they're also flabbergasted by how stupid a decision I made.
It is. It's tough. Here's the problem. It's so monumentally, obviously a mistake that you can't really be mad, and yet at the same time, it's such a monumental mistake, you feel like you need to be angry about it.
It seemed like they would print books.
Yeah,
I mean,
of course.
Anyway, they're patient enough, and it finally, 20-something minutes in, or so, maybe even a little more, it gets done. And
they took a nap.
I'm so sorry.
Right.
But the other thing, too, is I also needed just some, like, domestic stamps. And so I'm like, I'm not doing this again. So I got in the back of the long line.
Back of the long line. Yes. Oh, my God, Dan.
And so I waited in that line. Get to the front of the line.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I need a lot of stamps.
Yeah.
And they're like, we're out of rolls. We just have the sheets. The sheets of 20.
The sheets are what I was looking for in the first place.
Well, no. For the international
ones.
Yeah,
I understand.
For this, I would have loved a roll.
Rolls would be great.
Because they're a little bit easier. And so the pages of 20, and I'm like, I need a bunch of them. And the lady goes back, and she brings out a brick. And she's like, all right, I got you. And then I look down, and they're Nancy Reagan stamps.
She finally got you. She finally got you.
I was almost at a point of despair and just like, fuck it. Maybe our audience will think it's hilarious that they're all coming with Nancy Reagan stamps.
You know, when she was the first lady, they consulted their psychic. You know, Reagan and Nancy, they had a psychic that they went to regularly who would make policy decisions for the world.
Right.
Right? That psychic was like, oh, man. We got to make sure that we time this right, okay? Yeah.
The moment Dan's at his lowest at the post office.
You got to die.
Humiliated from standing for half an hour at this fucking machine. Yep.
What's the point of seeing the future if you can't really get specific with
it? I thought
you,
it was hilarious.
It's very funny.
And so I explained, because I start laughing, and I explained to the lady who's working there why it's funny. I'm like, I think that the people I'm sending stuff to would, I don't know, they're not Nancy Reagan fans. And she's like, oh, I got other ones. It's fine. And so she goes to the back, comes back out. I had a bunch of Missouri stamps. Everything is all right. But
sure.
Like, oh, God. The moment of that punch of the Nancy Reagan stamp.
God, that's so good.
So good.
That's so good.
It was the universe, man. It was the universe speaking in some way.
Yeah.
It's like, this is what you should get for standing in that line.
That is about as close to our version of the, like, when you see only one set of footprints, you know? When you see only one set of footprints, that's when Nancy Reagan brought you from the brink.
So anyway, I got these Missouri stamps, and stuff's coming out.
Stuff's coming out.
But yeah, so what's your bright spot?
My bright spot is, I've been playing Fire Emblem Engage.
Mm-hmm.
I've been streaming the playthrough, all right, on the Twitches.
Sure.
And it's been really, really fun.
Yeah,
there's a bunch of people, they come, they show, we all talk, the audience is
engaged?
I would say they are engaged with everything but the game. We have all decided that the game sucks now.
Damn.
I feel like that's where we're at.
Jordan is no longer pumped.
The story has so far lost me and so disappointed me that it's like all of us are slowly slogging towards the end of the game out of some sort of weird obligation. And it's really enjoyable to do with a bunch of people. You know?
I can see that.
If it was me by myself, I would have thrown the game away. I would have been like, I'll move on to something else.
Yeah.
But this like pig-headedness, that's great.
Well, there's a communal experience.
It is a communal experience.
Yeah, yeah.
And we are engaged in it.
And that carries even when the thing, like, it's like why you can watch bad movies with friends or a crowd.
Totally.
You know?
Yeah. Absolutely.
But I kind of have some similar feelings, I guess. I'm not as negative on it as you necessarily, but I have gotten a little bit less hype.
Yeah.
Still quite enjoyable, but I think, so here's what I understand from the other day I watched a video that was explaining the storylines of past Fire Emblem games
that I
missed.
Sure. Yeah.
I don't think the story is ever really that much to go on.
That's fair.
It's usually pretty cookie cutter kind of kingdom, prince and magic kind of
truth
stuff.
Totally.
So I think that is maybe a thing that you had because the expectations of Three Houses was very story dense. And
it
like,
was.
And I think I was thinking about this. The other problem that it has, this game, the Engage has, that is different than Three Houses, is that you have to recruit all of these fucking people.
Oh, man, there's so fucking
like,
many
Engage,
of them.
In Engage, there's so many characters.
There's so many.
That it becomes clogged in your lineup, and you're not using most of them most of the time. Whereas in Three Houses, you had to go out of your way to enlist people who weren't in your school.
Yep.
And you kind of took an interest in trying to figure out, how am I going to convince them to fight with me?
Totally.
And there was more of like a there's more of a connection with the people, whereas a lot of these characters are just kind of like, I don't know why you're here.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. No, with the Three Houses,
Boucheron,
you have
the, or whatever
you have
the fuck.
Oh, my God. Fuck Boucheron. Bounet, get the fuck out of here.
I don't even know who that is.
Exactly. No, because you have the inbuilt party system within the Three Houses of your house.
Yeah.
So you have the instinctive need to get to know them over the other characters to start with.
Yeah.
Right? And then once you've gotten to know them, maybe you find some people outside of your house that you like, that you want in your house. You don't have to just like win a story battle and then some asshole shows up and you're like, now I have to deal with your menu system. I'm sick of your job is dumb. Like, it's it's a mess.
Yeah.
It's a mess.
It might be too much.
It's too much.
But still not terrible. No. I still had I've had a good time, and I'll finish it down the road at some point.
I mean, it's a little bit hypocritical of me to complain this hard about a game that I have spent roughly 40 hours playing already.
Right,
you know? It'd be silly to be like, oh, this was a waste of time.
Did you finish the second Divine Paralogue?
No, I haven't even gotten to that yet.
Oh, man. When you get done with it, you get a ring, and it's fucking insane. Its power is that it reveals a bunch of Nancy Reagan stamps.
Ooh, no! God, that's the ultimate power.
You know, the second Divine Paralogue, I think, is DLC that's not available.
Oh, okay. That
I think
makes
they
sense.
Only have the one.
That makes sense. Yeah. Okay.
So, Jordan, today we have an episode to talk about, not just doing some bright spots, but what we're doing is we're going back to the past.
Good.
We are working our way towards the screen.
Yeah!
Yes.
We're coming
to... We're doing our best.
We're going
to
get there. Yeah!
We're coming for you, Milwaukee. Yeah!
I can't stress enough how good, you know, I've gone back and listened to The Scream since we've started talking about it. I can't stress enough, it is great.
It is pretty good.
It's great.
It's so silly that everyone cared so much.
It ruined an entire political career.
Maybe not. Maybe it wasn't the only thing.
I know,
but it,
I know.
We do remember it as the thing that buried the axe.
Listen, you can't be a progressive in America and try and win a presidency, okay?
Yeah.
That's just not going to happen.
Yeah. So hopefully we'll be able to time that out right, and we're doing that. Also, just in modern Alex notes, he, over the weekend, or maybe even a little bit at the end of last week, I'm not entirely sure the exact timeline, but he launched his new alexjones.live or something.
Oh, no.
Which eventually I think is going to be the subscription podcast service or whatever.
Sure.
At this point, there's like a video of him, like basically just like any other video of him, but it's at his house studio.
Sure.
Secondary new studio. There's a whole section where he does fireside chats where he sits by a fire.
No.
There's a section where he goes to the gun range and shoots things.
Okay, so he's choosing to do something that perhaps the most progressive president in American history is famous for?
Well, yeah, but he kept yelling that Trump needed to do that too.
Sure, that's fair.
And I think he's more ripping off Owen Benjamin, honestly. Because Owen Benjamin, after he went full Nazi, he would sit out in the woods by a fire and ramble about the Jews.
Wow.
So I think Alex is more taking a page out of that playbook than FDR.
Wow, man. You should have to be in prison if you want to mine Kampf it. That's all I'm saying.
I checked out this website because I was like, ooh, maybe there'll be some gold in here.
Sure.
But at this point, nothing's behind a paywall.
Mm-hmm.
There is no option to subscribe, so I don't know what the pricing looks like.
Okay.
And there is no terms of service link, so I don't know what business this is run through.
Right.
I don't know anything about the specifics of it.
Right.
But there is a page that has a refund policy section that says no refunds. But you can't sign up. So I don't know.
Well, it's a good thing they put that out there first.
Yeah.
You know, before you sign up, you want to know that you're not going to get a refund.
Yeah.
That's nice.
So anyway, watch that space. We'll find out more as things go along. But now we're back in 2003. We're going to be talking about December 22nd. And this episode is awesome.
Okay.
Because of something that happens towards the middle slash end.
Okay.
I love it. It's no war on cats.
Sure.
But...
I mean, the war on cats really did spawn something of a war.
Yeah.
There was a mighty response.
Yeah. Alex might have gotten the stupidest caller he's ever gotten.
Okay.
But it's someone who thinks exactly like him.
Right. Oh, my God. So it's clear. Oh, it's perfect.
So good.
It's like, you know, sometimes life is difficult to see. It seems cloudy. And then sometimes the sun appears and it's all clear.
And Alex hates him.
Yeah.
So we'll get down to business on this episode. But first, Jordan, let's say hello to some new wonks.
Ooh, that's a good idea.
So first, Eliza's mommy. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you very much.
This next person is... I mean, I don't know why you forwarded me this email.
You know why.
Because this, you don't want this.
No, I don't.
But they wanted me to sing as much of Wild Wild West as I want.
Oh, no, 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 no. You misunderstood. I added the as much as you want part. They had the entirety of the song
written out. Well, that might be how much I want.
Lyrically, the entirety of the song. Do you want the lyrics?
No.
Because it's on the email.
No, I know. I saw that. I don't need them.
Oh. You're right.
Yeah.
You're right. I'm the fool.
Yeah. So, thank you so much, Wicked Wicked Wild Wild West, Jim West, Desperado, Rough Rider, No You Don't Want Nada, None of This, Six Gun in This, Brother Run in This, Buffalo Soldier. Look, it's like I told you. Any damsel that's in distress will be out of that dress when she meets Jim West. Roughnecks, go check
you're
the law and abide, watch
your
step,
but you're working
get to hold
your way
your pride,
there.
Swallow your pride, don't let your lip react, you don't want to see my hand where my hip will be at, without a miss from the start of this, running the game, James West, taming the West, so remember the name. Now, who are you going to call? Not the GB. Now, who are you going to call? JWG. If you want to mess with any one of us, get out before you get bum rushed.
The audience
in the
can't
wild,
see
wild
this,
west.
But I am holy
when
ghosting
I roll
right
into
now.
Into the wild, wild west. When I stroll into the wild, wild west. When I bounce into the wild. We going straight. Dude, this is the Cisco
the
part.
The wild, wild west. We're going straight. To the wild, wild west.
Nah, nah, nah. Once upon a time in the west. Madman. Madman lost his damn mind in the West.
I thought we were good. I thought we had finished.
Loveless didn't ever die, nothing less. Now I must put his behind to the test. In the battle, through the shadows, ready for battle, bring all your boys in. Here come the poison. Behind the back are the Riffney kid, front and center. No way you let back, kid. Who that is? A mean brother, bad for your health. Looking damn good, too, if I could say it myself. They told me Loveless is a madman. But I don't feel that.
DJ
he got bad
Danarchy.
Weapons, too.
Ain't DJ
trying to
Danarchy.
Hear that. Trying to bring
I need
down
you to
me.
Hear
champion.
Me.
When
I'm
y'all
speaking to you
see
through
you
time.
Done.
This
me,
is
son.
Just
I'm
for you.
I'm the slickest
you.
Thing is.
No one else can hear you, DJ Dan.
I'm the quickest thing is. Did I say I'm the slickest thing is? So if you're barking up the wrong tree, we coming. Don't be starting nothing. Me and my partner gonna test your chest, Loveless. Can't stand the heat, then get out the wild, 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 wild west. When I roll the
top. Oh, my God.
Wild.
This song's still going.
Anyway, you're now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
And we get a second credit in the mix, Jordan.
Yeah, we don't have time for anybody else. No more time.
No. So thank you so much. My herd of cats will eat your ass like corn on the cob. Thank you so much. You are now a technocrat.
I'm a policy wonk.
4 stars. Go home to your mother and tell her you're brilliant.
Someone sodomite sent me a bucket of poop.
Daddy Shark. Bom, 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 bom. Jar Jar Binks has a Caribbean black accent. He's a loser little titty baby. I don't want to hate black people. I renounce Jesus Christ.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
You get off easy, Jordan. There's a whole nother verse.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe for another time. So we start the show on January 22nd, and Alex has a...
I'm sorry. It just reminds me so much of church whenever you're singing one of the hymns, and then they're like, oh, no, 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 no. There's a third verse, and you're like, oh, my God.
Yeah. If we open your hymnal to page 38, we have Wild Wild West.
It's a good church.
So Alex is a big guest coming on, and here is how he starts the show.
In the third hour, I have Congressman Ron Paul joining us to talk about a whole plethora of very important issues, including the national draft. And Rumsfeld says, we're going to need a bigger army. We're going to need more troops. And the recruiting is falling way under the numbers they need, and they've got all the draft legislation lined up for you and your family, and all they need do is provide another terror attack, and our journey into pure fascism will be complete.
So there's a lot going on in that clip.
Yeah.
First of all, can't wait to hear from racist Grandpa Paul. It's weird to think about this, but in 2003, his public image was very different than it is now, or it deserved to be then, because he had this weird appearance of being a rational voice of opposition to the war in Iraq. That did a whole lot of work masking the absurd John Birch Society-ass politics he actually espoused, but what I'm getting at is that he had a decent PR team back then.
Yeah.
Secondly, it's interesting that Alex will not stop saying the draft is right around the corner, which will be foisted upon us after a false flag terrorist attack, and I want to take a second to analyze the logic he's using to make that claim. He thinks Cheney needs a bigger military and recruitment is down. Meanwhile, there are these unspecified bill proposals or drafts that would bring back the draft. They're just waiting to go.
Right.
Any of these things could be true or not, but even if all of them are true, it does nothing to suggest that there's an elaborate plot to pull a false flag in order to bring in the draft. I have no idea what bills he's talking about, and if they do exist, they're destined to die in committee, so I'm not even going to take that seriously. As for Cheney wanting a bigger military and recruitment being down, that could be the impetus for instituting a draft, or it could be a motivation to explore other recruitment strategies, like fun CGI army commercials at movies. Alex's conclusion holds no weight. It's just the option he's decided to extrapolate out of the situation he sees because it's the one that fits his narratives and scares his extreme right-wing listeners the best.
Right.
I know that there were some real insecurities about the idea of a draft coming up at this point, but it's hard to believe that this was something the government would seriously consider doing. In the late 60s and early 70s, the largely campus-based anti-draft protest movements were a severe impediment to this enlistment strategy. According to the University of Washington, quote, "In 1972, there were more conscientious objectors than actual draftees. All major cities faced backlogs of induction refusal legal cases, and the Selective Service later reported that 206,000 persons were reported delinquent during the entire war period."
Yeah.
The lessons of that era are still real today, namely that there are too many people who would refuse to show up, and the government simply can't logistically punish everyone how they would need to in order to make the fear of punishment a motivating factor for people not to resist a draft.
Yeah. Korea can have a draft or a it needs to be, you have to spend 2 years in the military. There's only a few million people in there, you know. You cannot legislate the entirety of the United States to the point where you can get everybody who's drafted to show up.
Or there are other countries that have mandated and required service, and some of those things are long-standing and mm-hmm. parts of culture.
Oh, for sure. For Israel, of course. Yeah, from the jump.
Implementing something is different than something already existing.
Yeah.
You know? And that is definitely a factor.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't want to say that it's impossible, but I don't think a draft is ever coming back in the U.S. Some people in power may want one. It may feel like one is coming sometimes, and a bill might even be introduced. But the backlash was so severe, and I think that everyone knows that it would be so severe again, and I think we're all aware of that.
Yeah, I believe the backlash to an election being held and somebody winning correctly was almost a coup. So I think the backlash to somebody trying to institute a national draft would be way worse than a coup.
And I think I think something that's interesting is that I think that this was a much broader fear that Alex is taking advantage of at this period. Like, I think that a lot more people had this, like, well, they're going to bring back the draft.
It did feel like that.
Yeah.
I remember conversation because I was just coming out of high school.
Right.
Or no, I was at right around 2004, like, 2005.
I was coming right out of high school.
Yeah, you were coming right out of high school, and everybody I knew who was older than me was hitting 18, and it was a conversation of, like, I'm worried that I'll be drafted. That was a conversation. Yeah.
Yeah, it felt like a realistic possibility, mm-hmm. but I don't know how much of that was, like, rational and how much of it is just like, there's a fever panic around. Like,
sure.
There was a lot of distrust of how the government was handling
everything
stuff, and it seemed like, well, maybe they will. But in hindsight now, it seems like, of course they weren't going to do that.
Yeah, absolutely not.
The consequences would have outweighed whatever benefit they were hoping to get.
People didn't like the Iraq war almost immediately. Adding a draft to that would have been a disaster.
Right. But beyond that, though, it's interesting to realize that according to Alex, the definition of fascism is the United States in 2003 plus a draft. Debatably, there are some elements of fascism that were quite prominent in the U.S. at the time.
Sure.
But I think that it's funny that he seems to be suggesting that the only thing that's keeping the equation in balance is that there wasn't a draft.
Yep. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's weird. It's weird.
Explain to me what the draft would have added to the fascism. Because I think if you're going to add fascism, if the draft is part of fascism, then essentially you're saying that it's military run, right?
Maybe.
You know, so, but then the draft means that you can't get enough people for the military, so.
True. I mean, I don't know. Here's the thing. I think to Alex, fascism means something very different than, like, maybe a larger understanding of fascism.
I agree.
I think he uses it kind of interchangeably with his bizarre, like, sort of aesthetic notions of a police state.
Yeah.
And stuff like, so being forced to fight for the state is part of what he would call that.
Right. I mean, it does feel like what he thinks of as fascism is restricting his ability to do whatever he wants, regardless of the consequences.
Yeah. So we get to talking about Saddam.
How's he doing?
Ooh, he's been captured.
Oh, no.
But there's some conspiracies about it.
Uh-oh.
Also, a couple weeks ago, or a week ago, many Arabs skeptical on Saddam's capture. I wanted to go back to that because now it's coming out that, as usual, just like with Private Lynch, what we're being shown is a fable. The evidence is overwhelming. They've had him a long time. He's been drugged. He's been tortured. Why didn't they just tell the truth about it? Sick Saddam drugged. That's because he had to be drugged and tortured first, folks, so he wouldn't spout off about who he's business partners with. When we have the congressional reports by Republicans and Democrats, but, you know, it's bad to have the boogeyman saying he's buddies with Bush, just like bin Laden's buddies with him.
So for a moment, put aside the reality of falsity of what Alex is saying in terms of his narrative. It's important to recognize that what he's engaging in is only the headline of a story and not the actual content.
Right.
This is an article that's solely based on the assumptions of one person who had visited Saddam 2 days after his capture. He thought he looked sick and was maybe being given strong medication, but then offered no proof. This is just a guess. This person was a photographer who had accompanied Ahmad Shalabi for a meeting, and there's no reason to take this as definitive or proof of anything.
Sure.
Saddam's daughter is also cited in the article that Alex is using as saying that her father must be being drugged, which isn't, like, really all that strong in terms of evidence.
Sure.
This is also a misrepresentation of her comments by way of, like, Alex using this as defense of, like, Saddam being drugged. Because she was saying these things the way that she was saying that she meant to suggest that Saddam must have been drugged prior to his capture.
Sure.
To be going along with it.
Right.
Around this time, there were many rumors circulating that Saddam had been captured by local rivals as revenge, drugged, and then left to be found by U.S. forces.
Right.
But that's
kind of
a side thing to this article.
Sure.
This is about him being drugged in captivity.
Right.
Since this point, the doctor who treated Saddam, Dr. Sudip Bose, has come out and said that while he can't reveal specifics due to doctor-patient confidentiality, he, quote, treated him like he would any other patient.
Yeah.
I do think that there's some legitimate questions to ask about what kind of interrogation tactics may have been used, especially at this point when you're covering stuff, considering the context of what our government allowed in the war. But Alex is completely winging it here. He has nothing to base anything on other than conjecture.
Yeah, I mean, to me, that it makes perfect sense. Like, he was found in a hole.
You might need strong medication
so
to nurse him back to health.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
He might have had medical...
That's what I was thinking.
Issues.
It's like, if you take him to a hospital, they're probably trying to help him.
He might have, like, a broken bone and need painkillers or something, and that would make you look groggy.
Yeah.
There's a number of ways that you could make whatever comments this photographer made make sense in a non-conspiratorial, they're trying to drug him so he can't tell the truth way. But, you know... Everything is filtered through the prism of the narrative for Alex.
Yeah, and it doesn't really even make sense. Like, you torture people to find out information. Saddam is the information that you wanted to find out. There's no reason to torture him. I have no doubt that he was probably treated better than most people in American prisons.
You know, he's captured in December 2003.
Right.
By January, he's given POW status.
Yeah.
Like, he's... treated with ways that there's international monitoring.
Yeah, totally, totally. Absolutely. Yeah, the whole thing was to try and keep him alive as long as they could so they could kill him.
He did later say at his trial that he was tortured, but there's no evidence of that.
He wasn't tortured. What a liar.
I'm
going to tell you this right now. I don't trust Saddam.
What?
Yep.
Wow. You heard it here, folks. So Alex has a thought about Saddam's trial.
Sure.
Also, Saddam's verdict expected to take 5 years, like Slobo from Serbia. You'll forget all about him before that happens.
Slobo.
Wow, I had never considered calling him Slobo before. I kind of like it.
I don't hate it.
I don't hate it.
But I do love the idea that you'll just forget all about...
I will never forget about old Slobo. That shit ain't happening.
Forget about Slobo. Forget about Saddam if it takes a couple years to go through the legal process.
Right, right, right.
Next thing you know, he's going to tell me we forget about Dre.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just ridiculous.
How dare he?
Just because he's been in the lab with the pen and a pad trying to get this damn label off... He's not having that.
You better label this the rap episode.
Just give him one more platinum plaque and fuck rap. You can have it back.
It should just be Dan Raps. That's the description of this episode. Dan Raps.
No. I'll resist the urge further. So Alex has some thoughts about the globalists and some of their employment strategies. And this is just a way for him to be xenophobic.
Sure.
And all over the country to get on a plane or get on a bus or now to cross a bridge or to get on a ferry, men in black uniforms, usually illegal aliens, and I'm serious, 90% of those at the Boston airport weren't citizens and about 40% were illegal aliens, many of them from Syria, Iran, you name it. But again, we're going to accept all the matricula cards of the illegal aliens and legalize them, Ridge said 2 weeks ago,
great.
But you're going to have a magnifying glass crammed down your throat.
So there's two things there. One, he's making up these numbers.
Yeah.
There is no way that he knows the
but what,
the
how?
Status,
how?
The immigration status
right?
of people at an airport. Second, this just is the sort of standard treatment. The, like, they, in quotes, are treated so well. They're given everything. The globalists employ them. But you, noble Western... member of Christendom, use whatever sort of euphemism you want. They jam a magnifying glass down your throat.
No.
It's all just trying to create sort of racial aggrievement.
Yeah, it's like...
For white people.
It's like in like the 1840s Louisiana and the shit like that. Like, slave owners would essentially hire people to stop unions from happening by screaming, like, listen, they treat slaves better than you guys. You shouldn't do that. You know, like, they do the whole thing. It's all there.
Yeah,
it's all there.
These kind of tactics are inciting things that that have been used historically.
Yeah.
So Alex knows that this picture that was taken of Saddam in captivity was with Ahmad Chalabi.
Yeah.
And so he has a weird telling of their history that doesn't match up.
The photo, which is on PrisonPlanet.com and InfoWars.com, of a sick-looking and unkept Hussein showed him being visited by Dr. Chalabi, the number two man in the Shah's torture squad.
What?
Convicted bank robber wanted by our allies.
Who's the number one man?
Fled Iraq in 1958 after Hussein ordered him killed and is now the Pentagon's favorite to become the next Iraqi president.
Sure.
Who fled Iraq in 1958 after Hussein ordered him killed? What? Saddam Hussein was hired in 1954, this is a congressional report, to be a anti-communist assassin. Now Saddam was planning to kill him? And 4 years later? See how evil Saddam is.
So this is something that Alex says a lot, but it's not really well defined ever. And when he does talk about the backing of it, this employment of Saddam, he just says it's congressional reports, which is useless as a citation. Saddam does seem super old and all, but he was born in 1937, so he would have been 17 in 1954. At the time, it makes little sense for him to have been employed by Dwight D. Eisenhower's administration as an anti-communist assassin, considering that the Ba'ath Party was a socialist party and was involved with movements towards a pan-Arab republic, including countries like Egypt and Syria.
Right.
But Saddam didn't even join the party until 3 years later. In 1958, the Ba'athists supported General Abd al-Karim Qasim in his overthrow of the country, but then would be involved in a plot to assassinate him just a year year later, primarily due to Qasim's opposition to the idea of this pan-Arab republic. And Saddam was involved in that plotted assassination, which I think is what Alex is talking
about.
So there's no way Alex could prove the U.S. hired Saddam to be involved in that assassination plot or even prove outside involvement. The assassination failed and Saddam fled the country. So there's no way he would have had the power to make Shalabi flee at that point.
You know, this once again reinforces my belief in conspiracy theories about assassinations. Mm-hmm. All right. The conspiracy theories are that it is very hard to perform an assassination, right? You have to do all of these different things that are all these moving parts.
There's 100 variables.
Terrible idea. Here's how assassinations work. The ones that work do is some dude walks up to the president with a gun and then shoots him in the face. Like, that works so much. So much. What doesn't work is elaborate fucking pinky-in-the-brain-ass plans to assassinate
people.
You don't
need a million externalities to, like, possibly go wrong.
I swear to you, if you want somebody dead, if I was the going to tell you how to kill somebody, like Putin, here's what you do. You get 1,000 random people, and you just set them at the border and just go, eventually try and kill them if you can. Sooner or later, one of them walk up with a gun.
It's an interesting thought. I would actually have a counterpoint, and that is that everybody knows who's studied the subject that the world's greatest assassin, Rube Goldberg.
He's yet to lose.
It's true. They've never captured
him. He's never been captured.
Yep.
And he sets everything into motion. That's crazy.
Yeah. And no one's ever made a charge stick.
Sure. He's like Lupin the Third. He's just incredible.
Yeah. Also, Chalabi was 13 years old in 1958. That's also important to remember.
It's a little bit difficult.
His family fled Iraq that year in the aftermath of General Qasim's revolutionary overthrow. They were a high-profile family, and they would have been in danger after that because it was a successful coup. Right. So they fled.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that young Saddam put out a hit on a 13-year-old, though. That seems unlikely based on... But Alex is saying, I just have no idea what connection there is to reality.
The 60s were weird.
It's true.
Dude. That's the time.
This was the 50s.
Well.
Also, Chalabi isn't really a bank robber per se.
Sure.
He founded a bank called Petrobank, which crashed. And as a result, he was charged with bank fraud by a Jordanian military tribunal. By that point, he'd been smuggled out of the country. And so he never did time on the bank robbery thing.
Right.
And he claims he was set up. And I think, I'm not sure about the specifics of it. It seems like it was maybe some shady shit going on.
Yeah.
The Jordanian Central Bank called in, like, I think it was like 30 or 35% of the money that would have been in the banks.
Right.
His bank couldn't produce that money.
Right, because there wasn't any.
Right.
Because he was doing a Ponzi scheme.
And there was, from what I understand, also there was a number of loans that bank made were to his own businesses. And
right, like a Ponzi scheme.
Right.
Yeah.
So there may be some credence to the fraud elements of this,
but I'm
not entirely sure. I haven't read a full breakdown of any investigation of it.
I think the number one problem in our time is how long Ponzi schemes can get away with themselves for. So long. Like, and I mean, Madoff lasted for years. The FTX guy lasted for way longer than he should. Then there's the government. That's a Ponzi scheme. Mm-hmm. It's all fucked.
Yep. You need a Rube Goldberg Ponzi scheme.
You think that would work?
I'm also not sure about the torture thing. I think that Alex should cite a source on the number two guy for the Shah torture squad.
I would like more information about the Shah's torture squads.
I think that might be an extrapolation of the... sort of the accusations and stuff about Chalabi being close with Iran.
Mm-hmm.
And that is fair enough, but I don't know about being part of the Shah's torture squad.
I was going to say it would be odd for that crossover to happen, but hey, weirder things
if Alex wants to prove it, he can.
Go for it.
Anyway, Alex discusses the capture of Saddam here.
So it doesn't matter if everybody finds out the capture was staged because it's emotional. The big headlines say it wasn't staged. Later they can admit it was staged. But the average person won't differentiate. They're not concerned about hearing different stories every day.
Hmm.
It's
almost like a wet concrete scenario.
The nightly news is an entertainment program or something. It's just totally unconscious. Saddam was held by Kurdish forces, drugged, and left for the U.S. And I've got AP, AFP, Sunday Morning Herald, ABC, you name it. Saddam Hussein was captured by U.S. troops only after he had been taken prisoner by Kurdish forces, drugged and abandoned, ready for American soldiers to recover him, a British Sunday newspaper reported.
So this was an article in the Sunday Express tabloid that reported, based on an anonymous British intelligence source, that members of the Patriotic Union of Kurdistan had captured and drugged Saddam. They then negotiated with the U.S. for a bounty and abandoned him to be found by our troops. This is an interesting story, but it's never been confirmed. There's no indication that the $25 million bounty was paid, and there's some pretty compelling evidence and documentation of U.S. efforts to find Saddam,
right,
and progress that was being made on that front,
sure,
around this time.
Yeah.
This story conforms to Alex's narrative, though, so it's rock solid to him.
Yeah.
So there's this article in the Sunday Express, right? Mm-hmm. And it says this stuff.
Right.
But there's other sources,
too. No.
Where? That's a respected British newspaper talking to the intelligence source.
Really?
And the Australians have their people telling them this. Here's ABC News. Saddam held by Kurds, drugged, and left for U.S. troops. Saddam Hussein was captured by U.S. troops only after he had been taken prisoner by Kurdish forces, drugged and abandoned, ready for American soldiers to recover him, a British newspaper has reported. And I love this article calling it a tabloid, but I have a bunch of other papers reporting it.
So this is disturbing because it either is evidence of Alex being an intensely malicious liar, or it reveals that he's someone with a below adolescent level of media literacy. He has an article that's covering the story that the Kurds captured Saddam, which is just re-reporting something that was published in the Sunday Express based on an unnamed British intelligence source. Then he has an article that's from an Australian press outlet, which is also based on the same Sunday Express article, which is to say that it's all based on the same coverage of the unnamed British intelligence source.
Right.
Alex is reporting to his audience that this Australian press article is somehow a separate piece of news, not just the same story being covered by a different outlet. That level of stupidity is actually kind of scary to see in someone who's presenting themselves as a reliable source of insight, and what makes it even more alarming is that I think this is a pretty consistent thing with Alex. I'd never thought about it this way before, but this could explain why Alex covers the same story in multiple outlets the way he does.
Yeah.
I've always considered it to be a function of his laziness and knowing that his audience will see a bulk of headlines and assume that that means that there's more smoke there, so there's definitely fire. Hearing this coverage actually makes me think that Alex might think that each of these stories relies on different primary sourcing,
yeah,
and they're just coming out coincidentally at the same time. That is to say, the UK article is written because the British press has British sources telling them this stuff, and the Australian article is being written because the Australian press concurrently has their sources saying the same thing. If Alex believes that, it would make sense why he thinks like the picture that he's seeing is somehow far more convincing or overwhelming and also suspicious than it is. But that belief would have to be, like, it's entirely based on things he's making up in his head, based on primary misunderstandings of how the media works. Or he's a liar.
Right.
It's
right.
An interesting question, because I could see this going either way. I guess best case scenario here is that Alex is completely unqualified to explain the news to anyone based on his comically deficient understanding of what he's reading. Worst case scenario, he knows all this stuff is based on the same source, but knows that pretending otherwise would make it more convincing to his audience, so he's lying to them as a shortcut for his narratives. Not a good look either way.
Yeah, I think we get into problems here because for the longest time, we have considered the stupid v. evil continuum as a straight line, as opposed to Alex, who has managed to combine it into a circle.
No. Get this.
Yeah.
Triple helix.
There we go. All right. Now I've drawn it.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
So here's the problem, right? We cannot overestimate him, right? And yet we do by ascribing to him the basics of ability to read all too often. Like, and the more you described it, the more I was like, okay, if I were Alex and I saw a Bloomberg article, right, and I couldn't read it because it was behind the paywall, but then I saw a Yahoo article that was almost identical.
Maybe exactly identical.
Maybe the exact same fucking article. Then maybe I would think that Yahoo and Bloomberg, if I were Alex, that it had never occurred to me before.
Neither.
Because I was overestimating him by ascribing to him basic abilities that I didn't
understanding
even think.
Of yeah. primary sourcing and how these outlets report.
Totally.
That is one thing, but then I think there's also a feeling that I get from listening to it that is giving the impression that all of these things are based on different sources.
Right.
is kind of a strategy.
That's why he's turned exactly. it into a circle. It's not a continuum.
It's hard, but either way, I mean, it's an academic question on some level
sure.
because the reality is, whatever the case, he is an incredibly untrustworthy source of information.
Yeah.
Because he's either lying to make things easier for himself.
Right.
Or he's so out of touch with what published material is
right
that you should never listen to him.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It's wild.
I would say that he is he describes himself as above the left right continuum, but I believe he's above the stupid v evil continuum.
That might be
as like yeah. the apotheosis of both.
He broke the paradigm.
He did.
Yeah. Also, the Sunday Express, part of the Daily Express, is absolutely a tabloid, yeah. and also was a major voice for the appeasement of Hitler during World War II. They employed noted British fascist and anti-Semite Henry Williamson as a writer after he'd made a ton of pro-Hitler comments.
Sure.
He joined the British Union of Fascists.
Naturally.
And made plans he'd later abandoned to go to Germany so he could meet Hitler.
Oh.
It's a shit paper with a shit history, and his tabloid is shit. And, like, this doesn't even count, like, later libel
yeah.
cases they've had to solve. That doesn't mean that the story about Saddam is definitely not true, but it's a good cause to look for a second source, and not just a second source that's reposting the Sunday Express story. Alex can't find that second source, so it's a good thing he could just make it up.
Yeah.
That's a corroboration, baby.
Yeah, you know, it makes you almost think that after the Nuremberg trials should have had another portion for like media outlets, where it's like, listen, we're not doing the hanging thing. That's not for you guys. But also, you can't just support Hitler. You just can't do it. So we got to have something here. I don't know what it is.
Some kind of a, I don't know,
yeah.
I don't want to go commie on you, but truth and reconciliation
something
committee
along
of
those
some
lines.
Sorts of like, come on, guys,
yeah,
you can't
hey,
keep doing this.
You can't
this.
Do this, all right? No more.
So there's some other news in the world other than Saddam, and that is Al Gore has a son. And that son likes to burn tree.
Sure.
Likes to smoke some weed. You know
oh,
what I'm talking
man,
about?
Back in 2003 when it used to be bad
oh,
to smoke
man.
The weeds.
And Al Gore's son arrested for pot possession. I'm for drug decriminalization, but when Rush Limbaugh's on Oxycontin
then.
And he says arrest anybody on drugs, then I want him in prison. And when Al Gore
has
a lot of money for drug law enforcement programs, let's put his son in prison.
Okay.
You hypocrite.
So this is a great illustration of why taking hypocrisy to be fundamentally meaningful is a dead end in terms of having a solid position.
Thank you.
Here's the ground Alex is trying to lay claim to. He's against the criminalization of drugs and thus wants to be seen as supporting the recreational use of things like weed or, I guess in this case, even Oxycontin.
Sure.
Is fine, I guess. Mm-hmm. However, some people he doesn't like, who politically may disagree with decriminalization, also enjoy recreational drug use. They apparently should not be free to use drugs
right.
because of that opposition.
Right.
Their freedom to use drugs, which Alex allegedly believes in, is conditional upon them agreeing with Alex's position on drugs. Which is a little weird. In essence, in order for Alex to make this coherent at all, he can't possibly want to punish them for the drug use because that's something he ostensibly believes should be decriminalized. That means, in order for this to make any sense, then Alex has to want to outlaw hypocrisy, which is criminally stupid as a political position. Or maybe, is the reality that Alex doesn't think that drugs are fine and actually does think that people should be punished for using them? Is it possible that he just knows that advancing that position would make him look like a ridiculous person, considering his libertarian public image, and how it would mean that he would be advocating for the government dictating what you can and can't enjoy for fun?
Sure.
Is it possible he just knows the position he's supposed to have, but actually doesn't believe in that position? It's hard to tell, given the way that he carries himself.
Sure.
The question gets even weirder, because this hypocrisy thing is an accusation that it makes sense to direct at Rush, kind of. But what does Alex even know about Al Gore's son's positions on drugs? Alex has no idea what he thinks. But apparently Alex wants to require the son to adhere to the positions of the father or else their actions are hypocritical. That really seems fucking stupid, particularly for someone who's so invested in the idea of individuality. Alex is more or less advocating that you have an obligation to adhere to the moral set of your parents, even if you're an adult. And if you fail to do that, you should be arrested for something Alex doesn't think people should be arrested for.
Children are their parents.
Fucking stupid.
All right. I think what he's I think what's being expressed is a social theory that the vast majority of people will accept a system of law, no matter how draconian, if it is applied fairly over a system of law that may be far more lax, but applied unfairly. Hmm. So, for instance, if you were to get your hand cut off for stealing, right, that's fucked up. But if you knew that the fucking CEO of Chase, if he stole a dime from anybody he worked for, he would also get his hand cut off, then that would be more acceptable than a situation where if you steal, you get away with it. But if the Chase guy steals, he gets away with it, too. Mm-hmm. It's a social. I'm not saying that it's true but it is a social theory.
I understand that sort of mental framework.
Yeah.
I get that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think that Alex is not operating necessarily on that. I think that's a little too coherent.
I agree with you there. I think Alex is just a fucking idiot. I'm just interested in that theory because I would be interested in that concept.
Don't get me wrong. I think it's an interesting idea. I think it has no place in InfoWars because it's
none whatsoever.
An actual theory.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That would imply that there was consistency and you would have to follow through.
Yeah. I think that there's something really bizarre about this. Like, you're free to do drugs based on my philosophical beliefs unless you disagree with me about drugs.
Right.
That's weird. But then the thing that takes it over the top is that it's Al Gore's son.
Yeah.
Like, there is no room for individualism in this at all. I don't understand how Alex doesn't understand what he's saying or doesn't care that what he's espousing is something that's so like, do you now, Alex, have to live up to every ideal of your father?
Right. I mean, what it is the it is childish lashing out because of that, you know, like you don't. And yet this guy gets to do whatever he wants, and then I can't do whatever I want, and now
weird.
His son gets caught? That's some fucking bullshit, man. Like, that's childish. That's weird. A teenager.
It's weird.
Yeah.
So Alex gets a call from a guy.
Mm-hmm.
Call's not important.
No. This is not our call.
No.
This is not the call.
No. But after the call, Alex starts to get a little bit reflective about how dangerous his job is.
So that's what leads to the call.
No.
Oh.
No. This is disconnected from the call.
Okay.
The call will be later.
Okay.
This is just Alex talking about how dangerous his job is.
Okay.
Now, I don't want to go on too long about this, but you know, what I do is very dangerous. I'm a big fish in this fight. But there are tens of thousands of people who are now prominently fighting the New World Order, like Ron Paul and others. And many other talk show hosts and authors and folks that run websites. But a few years ago, the globalist, I believe from the evidence, had a provocateur go into Bohemian Grove and do a bunch of bad stuff and then get arrested and, you know, say my name. I got a report that a guy went into a big hardware store last night here in Austin, pulled his shirt off with a huge swastika on it and began saying, I work for Alex Jones. I work for Alex Jones. We've been at a pro-gun rally and had the swastika business happen before, and we found out they were federal informants doing it. But
buddy.
It's really comical. It's not going to work for them. I don't know what type of
cut to
thing they're trying to prepare for me, but I have a bad feeling, and you know, my family and in this country is worth whatever the cost is.
It turns out the cost is being really fucking rich for many, many years, and then this is just so pathetic. There's like it's so dangerous. These people who have to pretend to be my listeners and do fucked up things, as opposed to just recognizing that you got some Nazis in your audience because you do a lot of Nazi shit.
Yeah, I mean, in a sense, though, his job is very dangerous because no job I've ever worked has ever had a liability possibility of $1.5 billion.
No, that's true.
Like, that's a dangerous job.
That's true. He didn't recognize that at the time.
No, that's also true.
He also does have a dangerous job, just not in the way he thinks. He's pretending that he has like a target on his back from the fucking globalists.
Right.
The reality is he has a real danger of being around his own audience.
Yeah, he's more likely to get Lenin'd than he is to get Lincoln'd,
yes,
if you will.
Yes. That's why, like, that video is so, like, awesome of him running away from the Sixth Street Spider-Man when he was approached by him at a bar when he was doing that live stream with Milo. Mm-hmm. Like, it is so critical for him to not spend time with his audience, like, particularly the listeners who are giving off the "I really believe you" vibes.
I love everything you do. That's not good.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so that is a dangerous job, because you might be in that hardware store when your Nazi fan takes off his shirt and he's got a swastika going on. You know, like, that is a liability.
I think he instinctively understands the difference between love and intensity of emotion. Mm. You know, like, for their love, it's an intensity of emotion that can be love or can be hate at any moment.
I think he also intuitively understands that, like, these people that he's describing are the natural byproducts of the kind of reporting and information space that he lives in.
100%.
But it's also super important to make sure everyone knows that we've determined somehow that they're all feds.
Yeah.
Like,
every negative
kind of byproduct of the stuff that I do is really the feds.
It's the feds.
I think that's pretty cool.
And we know for a fact that you know there's Nazis.
Yep. So we get back to Saddam here for a minute.
Okay.
Alex says something that I don't know where this is even coming from.
It's now coming out, what we could already tell from the evidence, that Saddam had been held for at least 3 weeks by the Kurds, and that was a staged capture. Then you watch the video of Colonel Hinckley telling the troops, "Keep their mouths shut, let me tell you the official story." And that was on CNN, of all places. They don't even hide this stuff.
There's nothing in those articles about the Kurds keeping Saddam for 3 weeks. It's just something that Alex is throwing in.
Yeah, that seems weird.
Yeah, it seems like that would be incredibly difficult to do, too.
The United States government is ostensibly still looking for him for this 3 week period, right?
Yeah, I think so.
So are you telling me that this Kurdish group was constantly on the move for 3 weeks, hiding from the United States government?
And drugging the deposed
president
of Iraq.
Without anyone seeing them, without him getting away or anything like that?
Without any of the people who may or may not have been in touch with Saddam knowing.
Totally.
Yeah, it's very... 3 weeks seems long.
Now, what does seem believable is that he's in a nondescript hole, invisible from just about everything, hiding with barely any air. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
I know a dictator who's done that before.
Guy who Alex might
he's
have
a
some
complete
interesting
badass,
feelings about.
Yeah.
So, Alex, you know, there's also a bunch of conversations. We talked about this on the last episode. These terror alerts are happening. You know, there's like the orange level. And like we discussed in the last episode, a lot of this traces back to Dennis Montgomery's fraud that he perpetuated on the U.S. government.
Oh, my God.
Claiming that he had a technology that would allow him to predict terrorist plots based on like signals in Al Jazeera or shit like that. And so there, Alex is talking about these fake alerts and what have you. And he's pretty concerned about what's going to happen if it ever gets to red.
It's amazing. We're on the heightened terror alert. Members of FEMA, federal and state, have said that if we go to a red alert, we're all going to be basically slaves and have no rights. Well, the comment was,
that'd be a weird thing to say.
Virtually all your liberties will be stripped away. You'll be an enemy combatant if you leave your home.
So Alex is referencing an article from that March in the South Jersey News. Sid Casperson was the counterterrorism head for the state of New Jersey, and he was commenting on what a red alert would entail. The assumption that you would be the enemy if you were outside, that's not based on a quote from him, but it's an assessment made by the person who's writing the article.
Sure.
The article quotes Casperson as saying, quote, "You literally are staying home is what happens, unless you're required to be out. No different than if you had a state of emergency with a snowstorm." He also didn't say that you would be a slave or all your liberties would be taken away.
Yeah.
The article says, quote, "A red alert would also tear away virtually all personal freedoms to move about and associate." This isn't Casperson saying that. It's the reporter's characterization of how a red alert would limit transportation and people being able to congregate places.
Yeah.
Kind of makes sense. It's an unfair relaying of information is what Alex is doing.
I mean, post-COVID lockdown... it feels a little bit overreacting.
it's just irresponsible.
Yeah.
I know that, you know, it's kind of dicey stuff, and like the idea that these terror alerts were being based on this fraudulent bullshit not good. And the idea of like these kind of measures being taken in the context of a heightened terror alert.
Yeah.
It's scary and maybe, you know, something that is worth criticism.
Right.
But the criticism that Alex is levying at it is just bullshit.
Right.
It's useless and counterproductive.
Beware of any story that makes you go, I can't believe they do that, because there's a reason you can't believe they'd do
that. Get my gun.
They wouldn't do that. They can't do that. They wouldn't do that.
So a caller drops by. This isn't the guy.
Okay.
Although the guy is next.
He's coming.
Yeah.
Okay.
So this caller, though, he has a booking request for Alex.
All right.
And then Alex has a, well, what about this guy?
Uh-oh.
And it's bad.
Let's talk to Garrett in Louisiana. Go ahead, Garrett.
How you doing, Alex, man?
Fine, my friend.
Well, man, yeah, things are coming down heavy. And I was wondering when you're going to have Jim Rawls on again as a guest on your show.
Jim who?
Jim Rawls, Patriots, Surviving the Coming Collapse author.
Oh, John Wesley Rawls, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I do need to interview him.
We need to get...
I also want to interview Mr. Chittum of Civil War II.
Oh, yeah, wow. That's a good book, too. It's a good book also. It's a little bit, you know, different race type issues, but it's a scenario, and it is maybe
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
Reading that book, it just talks about what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Because they are creating racial divides. They are balkanizing the country.
I'm not saying he's a racist. It's just it shows what's going to happen. And I'm in one of the worst places that I could ever want to be. But
down in Louisiana. So this isn't a great sign when a caller calls into InfoWars and he responds to a guest Alex wants to have on by saying, oh, there's a lot of racial stuff.
Yeah.
And then Alex has to get defensive. So this is about the book Civil War II, which was written by Thomas Chittum. Here's some fun facts about Chittum.
Let's hear him.
In 1998, he was a speaker at the first annual conference on racial separatism.
Sure.
Which also featured such racists as Jared Taylor.
What?
Willis Cardo.
No.
And the founder of Stormfront and associate of Ron Paul, Don Black.
Great.
He published his book, Civil War II, as a possible scenario for how race war will break down in America. And if you cruise websites that discuss it, one of the frequent comments is, it's not exactly like the Turner Diaries, which is cool. It's real cool that that's the comment that people distinguish.
Exactly like it.
Yeah.
Ah.
He's a committed racist, homophobe, and white nationalist, to put it in the most generous way possible. Also, he apparently enlisted in the Zimbabwean Civil War in the early 70s.
Sure.
Keep in mind that he's an American who was born in New Jersey.
Right.
He decided to enlist and fight, predictably, on the side of the Rhodesian forces who were trying to maintain a brutal white supremacist apartheid state.
That's what I was expecting.
This guy is so far beyond racist. Alex knows all this. He just doesn't think the things that I've mentioned are actually racist.
Like I understand why in the context of war you think it's different, but what you got to understand is that he's just a serial killer who's a racist. Like, it has nothing to do with war. He is a serial killer who kills people based upon their race.
I think he even talked a little bit about like the killing and stuff.
Yeah, he's a serial killer.
I
see no difference between him and fucking Ted Bundy or whatever it is.
I normally hear people who have like these elaborate claims about, you know, their service and stuff like this. And
yeah,
a lot of times there's a bit of embellishment, but from everything I can tell, he actually did go to be a mercenary in Zimbabwe.
Wow, that's serial killer shit. Wild.
Look, he's not a racist.
Hey. What he isn't is a murderer. No, all right, and he's a legal murderer.
Sure. In 1998, he was one of the featured speakers at the racial separatism conference.
Right. But that's not racism. That's separatism. It's completely different.
There's also on C-SPAN, you can find a two-hour symposium that they rented out the National Press Club.
Sure.
And it's a group that wants to end racism through self-determination. And
good.
It's this guy, Chittum.
Bad.
Jared Taylor.
Not good.
Couple other racists.
Bad.
And they're just talking about how black people and white people shouldn't be around
there
each other.
That's what I was thinking.
You shouldn't force me to live around black people. It's wild.
Wild.
So anyway, I've promised you this caller, and now I will pay off this caller. This has to do with a conversation that they're having about torture.
All right.
This caller kind of thinks torture's fine.
Sure.
And so Alex knows I'm going to make some cheap points here. This is going to be easy.
It's going to be great.
he's saying essentially, like, why is it so bad when we do it, when they do it? That kind of thing.
Sure, moral relativism is great. It always works.
And Alex brings up, like, well, he brings up the example of Vietnam.
Right.
This was an interesting thing for him to bring up, but it is a more interesting response.
And away we go.
Did you know that in the Revolutionary War, we didn't torture anybody and we treated the Redcoats with respect and that ended up helping us? Did you know the British did torture and that blew up in their face? So you don't know what you're talking about.
Well, that's what I saw in a Mel Gibson.
Hold on. The Northern Vietnamese, when our jets would get shot down, would torture people. And they said, oh, it's to get intelligence. Now, are you saying it was okay for them to torture our pilots? It would save communist lives.
Alex, there were no pilots. We didn't even dive bomb those guys.
What?
Oh, you're saying pilots didn't get tortured by Vietnam?
There were no pilots. Our planes weren't allowed to go over there. We weren't allowed to bomb them. We weren't allowed to gather intelligence. We weren't allowed to do anything.
You really are, sir, we did have soldiers. We did have a lot of pilots captured. Now, come on.
No, you know we weren't allowed to bomb or do anything.
No, sir.
One of them's a senator right now.
John McCain was in custody. Are you saying we didn't have people shot down and tortured?
Who could be shot down when we're not allowed to fly over it? Otherwise, we'd have bombed the out of them.
How long you been listening to this show?
A couple of years.
And all this time listening, you don't know that we had people shot down over Vietnam.
Well, Alex, I mean, I did a whole report for a history class once on Vietnam.
A history class?
I was all over the library.
Sir, do you know about the SAM missile batteries? You didn't know we had thousands of aircraft shot down?
There were no aircraft. We weren't allowed to bomb them.
Thousands.
Doing if we weren't allowed to bomb them. Answer me that.
That was Hanoi we couldn't bomb.
See, Alex is right. There was this area around Hanoi and the port.
Yes. No-fly space.
Yeah. And so this caller has taken this erroneous understanding of the information.
Whole country.
Most likely, that's the explanation for taking this and then creating a narrative out of it.
The entire island. Can't fly over it.
It's very similar in terms of the way that Alex uses information.
100%.
But it's something that is so comically disputable, debunkable, that Alex wouldn't even think of, like, there were no planes in Vietnam.
Yeah, that one's like, that one's good.
It's ridiculous.
I mean,
but this guy believes it.
Yeah, no, and he believes it.
Oh, yeah.
That is not a man who is at all fucking with anyone.
No. Nope.
That is a man who did a fucking report for history class, okay?
Yeah.
He knows his shit.
I do love, there's a tiny moment in there where Alex is about to say, you are really stupid. But he stops himself.
He did do that.
I love that.
I heard that, yes.
Because it's like, that's probably the response you should have.
That's a fair one. That's
ridiculous. You can't believe that.
No, you can't, sir.
But he does.
Excuse me, sir. No, you cannot.
And he believes it so much that it stumps Alex.
I know a lot of people are like you, but I care about you. I care about you being a free person, Jonathan. What are you going to do when you find out that we had thousands of jets and prop planes and C-130s and B-52s and Thunder Chiefs and just tons of aircraft?
And I expect you expect me to believe that they all just shot the Vietnamese and bombed them and everything else.
Yeah, man.
What?
Yeah.
Yes, we had a war from 1964 to 1972, 1973, and we lost thousands
because
of
we
pilots.
Allowed to
very
bomb.
Brave men. Yes, and the Vietnamese did torture them. They had them on TV saying America was bad after they'd been tortured. Yes, that did happen. Yes, it did. And torture's wrong. Anything else, Jonathan?
I mean,
it's wild.
Hey, look, we can agree to disagree whether or not planes were over Vietnam in the Vietnam War.
Sure. Operation Rolling Thunder didn't happen. This is why I love this show in 2003. This is like,
you just don't get it.
You can't, like,
I never
write
would have imagined.
Like
I would
this.
Never have imagined
no.
that. No. We've known people who have written for SNL. Mm-hmm. We've known people who've done all kinds of things. And if they had brought that sketch to somebody, they'd have been like, no, That would never fly.
But I, well, like the planes in Vietnam. I don't think anybody would be able to even conceive of this.
No.
As like, you sit around and you workshop some conspiracies for like a fake caller to throw around with Alex. There were no planes in Vietnam is amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah, that's why the birds are a conspiracy. That's why that swing was so good. Because the idea of just being like, nope, all birds aren't real. But that's, of course, why you can see through it so easily, is because you're like, I mean, obviously birds are real.
Well, there were no birds in Vietnam. By that, I mean planes,
oh,
baby.
Shit, you might be right.
Mm-hmm.
All planes are birds, or all birds are planes?
Not all birds are gentlemen, but all birds are planes. So, Alex...
What about the Scotsman? How's the Scotsman doing? Is he true or not?
I have bad news.
There are no true Scotsmen.
So, Alex ends the call with this guy having made no headway.
I believe that.
This guy, he leaves the call still thinking there were no planes in Vietnam.
I think it's one of his foundational beliefs.
Probably.
Yeah.
So, Alex pivots from this call to talking with his water sponsor,
sure,
who comes on every day. And he wants to talk about that caller with the water sponsor.
Of course you do. Yeah. Are there planes? I know planes were over Vietnam. Please, please confirm. I'm not insane.
Right?
Yeah. I'm not insane.
Please, water sponsor.
Please, water sponsor.
And Jonathan, I don't know what I can say to you. We're going to go to Kim and Mark and Alan and Sean and others here in a minute. I want to bring up for 5 minutes my good buddy Jim Shepherd, who I appreciate holding. Jim, did you hear that guy saying that our pilots weren't shot down in Vietnam and tortured?
Yeah, I did. And I just think that, you know, there's a lot of... it depends on where you're getting your information. You know, if you just pull up the nightly news and listen to the Ted Koppels of the world, you get this real pretty picture of the way things are and
what?
The way things ought to be. But, you know, if you dig in and you start looking a little bit below the surface... there's all kinds of information out there. That,
you are going the complete wrong direction.
You don't have to dig beneath the surface to find out what happened in Vietnam.
That is the opposite way.
Well,
you are drilling.
I think that probably to the gentleman that called in, he's probably, you know, he's heard you and he hasn't heard that before, and he hasn't probably taken the time to actually look into the matter.
What? Yeah, so what I'm hearing is the water sponsor saying, like, man, if you just listen to the MSM, they'll tell you there were no planes.
There were no planes over Vietnam. That's the problem with Ted Koppel.
I mean, I hate to use this expression because it's plane related, but, like, that's how on autopilot, like, a lot of this conspiracy shit
is. It is just like, it's the mainstream media who tell you something that stupid.
That guy just couldn't dig for the truth.
What are you talking about?
Sell your filters.
Oh, boy.
Anyway, Alex goes back to calls.
All right, I know we can breathe this air, but how about this? I bet there's a lot of air at the bottom of the ocean, so let's just dive down in there free and see what happens.
You fucking Ted Koppel listening motherfucker. So Alex goes back to calls, and of course, this becomes the only thing that is relevant.
It's the only thing I can think about.
Yeah. And this caller says something that I love.
Uh-huh.
A turn of phrase that I've never heard before, and I plan to start using a lot.
Okay.
Walton, Kansas City, go ahead.
Well, God bless you, Alex. I heard this guy on there, and boy, I'll tell you what, for he that doesn't think that a lot of our guys got shot down or that we just didn't blow anything up over there, he was correct in the fact that there were no fly, no attack zones, and that's what infuriated me is a lot of the no fly, no attack zones were their tank farms, not tanks as in army tanks, but in fuel tanks. We weren't to bomb those.
Well, he was saying that we didn't lose any pilots or that they weren't tortured in Vietnam.
Yeah, well, I don't... Everybody was tortured over there that was captured. You can bet your bippy on that.
Yeah. You can bet your bippy.
I will bet all the bippies on that.
God, I hope... I didn't look it up. I hope that's not a racist expression because it sounds so funny.
I mean, now you made me say it.
I know.
Now we're both culpable.
Fuck.
If this is a racist expression, we are saying it innocently. Please let us know.
I'm going to Google it.
Oh, we're
going to
Google it right now. We will edit this part out.
Well, okay. What does bet your sweet bippy mean? That it's definitely correct. Okay, so the expression became popular in the late 60s when characters used it on a show called Laugh-In'.
Oh, it was a laughing thing.
Yeah,
wow.
It's similar to the expression, you can bet your ass.
Yeah, of course.
This expression has the same meaning. You could be certain about that.
Bet your bottom dollar.
They were just trying to get around censorship.
Right.
So I don't think it's racist.
Sure.
Ooh, what a relief.
Hey.
You never know, though.
It was on Laughing. Which, what's her name isn't going to be... never mind. I already forgot. Yep.
So, Ron Paul comes on in the third hour.
I forgot that Ron Paul was coming. After that call, I'm lost.
But it's really a boring interview. He's only on for a couple segments. There's not really much to say. But
do they talk about the planes?
That's
of course
how it
they
starts.
Do. Of course they do. That's it's the only thing we're talking about now.
And I've had Ron Paul on the show many times. We're going to have him for the next two segments, maybe even get to a few calls in the next segment. I got a host of issues I want to throw out at the congressman. But Congressman Ron Paul, before we go any further, I had a caller last hour that caused quite a controversy here on air.
It's he not said a controversy.
Torture was basically a good idea. And then I said, well, what about our troops that got shot down in Vietnam? They got tortured. Are you saying that was okay? He then said, no, none of our troops got shot down over Vietnam. I'm going from memory here, but weren't you involved in Vietnam in the air?
No, not really. I was involved during that period of time. I was in the military. I was in the Air Force as a flight surgeon from 1963 to 68, but not actually in Vietnam.
Okay, but now I know that we had a bunch of aircraft shot down and troops tortured, but can you give us your historical view on that?
Well, I mean, that doesn't even deceive. I mean, I can't understand anybody saying that. We probably had a lot more helicopters shot down than airplanes, and the people in the helicopters were the ones that ended up being prisoners so often. But there were hundreds of helicopters shot down.
Good use of time. I love the presentation of this. It caused quite a controversy. No, it didn't.
It absolutely did not.
What I think is fascinating about this is on a show like this, you get a call like this guy.
Yeah.
And one of the things that would be maybe a good use of time is exploring why someone would think this.
Yeah.
And like understanding the information and the use of it, the misuse of it.
Mm-hmm.
Alex could actually provide his audience with maybe a little bit of a service if they explored that, as opposed
totally.
To him constantly running up against people like other callers, his water sponsor, Ron mm-hmm. Paul, and just being like, hey, get my back on this.
Yeah, seriously.
Because no one needs to get his back.
No.
I can't imagine him being insecure about listeners believing that caller, but maybe that's the truth. Maybe he does feel like he needs people to vouch for him that there were planes because now someone has introduced the idea that there weren't.
Because in his world, that is, once you introduce that possibility, that is a real possibility.
Hey, bro.
In our world.
Hey, bro. You plane pilled?
That's what I'm saying. In our world, that is not a possibility. But
no.
In his world, if you just introduce that thought, he has to then confront it with his brain that says, well, they've lied about planes before.
Uh-oh.
You know, he can't not do that.
Right.
That's part of his brain.
Were you there?
Totally.
I wasn't there
like
in Vietnam.
If I heard this
call. Oh, you saw pictures of planes?
That's sure. What I'm saying. If I heard this call, I'd be like, dude, they were there. What does it take to convince you? Because I know for a fact they were there. So I will give you what information you need.
You just saw Forrest Gump, man. That's all you know,
okay,
man.
Okay, dude. Then I guess we got to go.
You believe?
I do.
Fucking
there
that,
were. I listen. I love.
You believe
Ted Koppel.
McCain?
Have you seen Ted Koppel?
McCain is a globalist shill.
That's true.
Right? He would lie about flying a plane.
You know, you're bringing up a lot of good questions.
I just like the idea that there's an imagined thought process of one of these listeners that's like, huh? Maybe there were no planes. Alex says that there were. That water sponsor seems to be pretty convinced. Wait, Ron Paul. Yeah, Ron Paul says they're planes.
Now
I mean, I just can't, you know, I, that weighs
yeah,
the
but
scales.
Ron Paul's
you know?
Part of the government.
Yeah, but he's the good part.
You think that, but he thinks that there were planes over Vietnam. How do you know he's part of the good part?
Oh, no.
Yep. This calls into question everything. I can see now why he's having a meltdown.
All of a sudden, there's a schism.
There is.
Yeah.
In real time.
There's the, you know, like how QAnon had the people who think JFK Jr. is alive
right.
and the other people who don't.
Right.
Now we have the planers and the no-planers.
And the no-planers.
Yeah. So we have one last clip here.
Okay.
And it's just checking in on the success rate of Alex's films.
I've made 10 documentary films. We have found no better tool. This is not hype, folks. This is the truth. You've heard the listeners.
Okay.
No better tool at unlocking minds.
All right.
90% of those that see 9/11 Road to Tyranny, Masters of Terror, Police State 3 Total Enslavement, Matrix of Evil, Dark Secrets Inside Bohemian Grove, they're waking up.
Holding steady.
90%.
Holding steady at 90.
Mm.
Good. Good. No dip.
No, that's great.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Love it.
No complaints. If you got a 90% conversion rate, that is what advertisers would die for.
Yeah. I'm not going to do this, but if anybody wants to waste some time, it would be great if they graphed this.
Yeah, that would be fun.
I will continue giving updates on the success rate. But it would be really interesting to have like a line graph of how this is over time.
It is, and you know, like whoever described the stock market as a measurement of rich people's emotional state, you know? Mm-hmm.
This is one man's emotional state.
This is one man's emotional state. How well his documentaries are doing in a fictional state of conversion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think
like
that'd be valuable for historians. So, Jordan, we come to the end of this, and I have to ask, did that caller disappoint?
Absolutely not. Nope. 100% nailed it.
Don't remember anything else that happened prior?
No notes. Yeah. There were no planes at all over Vietnam is such a statement that he said with conviction, that he said with true belief, and that he was not willing to waver from.
This is what I'm talking about the past.
It's just
like there are times when you can interact with something that is really meaningful, and there's like an in-depth conspiracy that Alex is, you know, you can track the way that he's misusing information in a valuable way much more than the present.
Yeah.
And simultaneously, you can listen to one episode and he declares war on cats because he's insecure about his wife's cat.
Sure.
Then the next episode, there's a caller who doesn't think there were planes in Vietnam.
There weren't planes in Vietnam.
It's just better.
It's a better time. It's fireworks.
There's more meat on the bones.
Yep.
There's more interesting things.
Oh, yeah.
It's just better. And I hope we can make it to the Yeehaw.
I'm excited for the live show.
But
if we suspiciously start slowing down around the last week before March,
we'll see. We'll see what happens. But until then, Jordan, we have a website.
Indeed we do. It's knowledgefight.com.
Yes. We're also on Twitter.
We are on Twitter. It's @knowledge_fight.
Yep. We'll be back. But until then, I'm Neo. I'm Leo. I'm DZX Clark. I would really appreciate it if you did not send any more emails to the button email. I've got them coming out.
Buttons are done.
People who needed replacements, people who moved, all that. I have gotten those emails. Just please don't send any more emails. I'm not going to see them.
No more emails.
The shit's done. Anyway, the juicy ice cubes.
And now here comes the sex robots.
Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
I love you.